If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at BestWestern.com.
Fully Loaded Chew is tobacco-free, long cut, and pouches that gives you the same pack, dip, spit, and buzz that you're used to without tobacco. Fully Loaded Chew comes in 9 flavors and is made with all food-grade ingredients and tobacco-free nicotine, the purest form of nicotine there is. To give us a try, head on over to fullyloadedchew.com for a $1 can of chew with free shipping when you enter the code OUTDOOR1. OUTDOOR and the number 1. Lastly, many outdoorsmen are trying to quit tobacco altogether, and Fully Loaded Chew may be that first step. For more information on our product line, visit fullyloadedchew.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and we have a good old-fashioned BS session today. I'm joined by Tony Peterson. Now, everybody knows Tony as the, the guy who's out on public land trying to get it done, trying to chase down whitetails, hunting strategy. But, for me, I didn't know this. A lot of guys who read magazines back in the day did, but I didn't know this, that he was a gear editor or an equipment editor for a magazine for about 10 years, where he would all he would do is write and talk about hunting gear and equipment. So I felt it was necessary to bring him on. And man, we talk a little bit about everything. It's just a good old-fashioned BS session. We talk about the impact of marketing campaigns and how that affects people. We talk about whether or not products are made in America and the impact that that has on people's purchasing decision. We talk about how he chooses some of his equipment. We talk about, you know, we use it like bow manufacturers as examples and things like that. So it's a really good episode. I'm sure you guys will enjoy it. So sit back, relax, enjoy. I'm going to do a quick commercial break right now. If you haven't been to theaverageconservationist.com to check out their lineup of hats, t-shirts, hats, t-shirts, hoodies. They have a full lineup of really awesome, I guess it's a lifestyle brand, apparel. My favorite hoodie is the camo hoodie. My favorite hat is, I think it's called the General hat. And it's called the Euro Tee, where it's like an elk, a mule deer, and a whitetail Euro mount on the front of it. Really cool. And it's those t-shirts that fit good around the chest and the arms, but kind of a little straighter cut for the gentleman like myself with love handles. So go out to theaverageconservationist.com, check it out, and at checkout, enter the discount code NFC10, and you'll get 10% off of your purchase. Next is Hunt Stand. If you are the kind of person who has just been popping into the woods and hasn't yet to pick up any type of, a hunting app, you need to try Hunt Stand. And the best thing about Hunt Stand is it's free to download. You can mess around with it. But then when you want to upgrade and start unlocking all of the functionality, it's only like $30 a year for an entire year. So compared to other hunting apps that are out there, it's very affordable. And it has some of the most robust features compared to any other hunting app on the market. I mean, you name it, it's got it, right? Updated satellite imagery. It has landowner information. It has property boundaries, public land boundaries, access. It has weather. You can document trail camera pictures. You can leave pins behind to basically journal entry your time spent in the woods. And the more information and data that you gather, the more likelihood you will have of putting yourself in the right position for whatever game you're trying to chase down. So huntstand.com for more information. Enter the discount code SN20 for 20% off. And lastly, I'm really going to try to get the owners of Novex on the podcast here in the next couple months, hopefully, to talk about the transition away from Lone Wolf. It's not a rebrand. It is a slightly different product. For the most part, they function the same, but these tree stands are made in America. And so we're kind of, Lone Wolf is going away and now it's Novex. But more information is going to be coming on that. So, and I think I'll have a discount code for you coming up pretty soon too. So stay tuned for that. But we're done with the commercials, so let's get into today's Hunting Gear BS session with Tony Peterson. 3, 2, 1. All right, on the Hunting Gear podcast today, Mr. Tony Peterson. Tony, how we doing, man?
I'm good, buddy. How's the COVID recovery going?
COVID recovery is going... So I feel good. I have like a slight cough. I have like a bit of a runny nose, but I feel good. The only thing that really sucks is I can still smell, I can still taste, but peanut butter tastes like glue, meat tastes like this putrid ammonia, and like pickles taste like almost vomit. And I've just not been eating lately. It's crazy how I mean, just imagine your favorite food like bacon smelling like shit. That's what I got going on right now.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So
but you might be getting, beach body ready anyway.
Exactly. Just anorexia, I guess. There you go. That's probably a better term. Just straight not eating. Yeah. The unhealthy way of getting a beach body.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're making a sacrifice. You're going to look amazing though on spring break.
Exactly. Exactly. So, on this episode of the Hunting Gear podcast, I'd like to talk about your experience being the equipment editor at Bowhunting Magazine. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about what that all entailed, what your job was there, and like what you wrote about, how you compared products, that kind of stuff.
Oh man, we got 10 years to boil down here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I got the job, so this was at Bowhunter Magazine.
Bowhunter Magazine.
Yeah, so the same company owns Peterson's Bowhunting and Bowhunter, and people mix them up all the time. But This was my role as equipment editor. You know, I wrote a column on some category of gear in the bowhunting space. You know, every issue for 10 years, and did a lot of gear testing, a lot of shooting different bows, setting up different bows. And it was an eye opener, man. I mean, in a lot of different ways, just to get your hands on that quantity of gear and then, you know, not only set it up and shoot it in the yard or whatever, but get to take it out and hunt with it.
Yeah.
It really kind of, I feel really fortunate because it really kind of shapes how I think about gear now, or it shaped how I think about gear now.
Yeah. So it set kind of a foundation of your thoughts and how you choose your own equipment.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was an eye opener for me on two fronts, right? Like I had been a magazine editor for a couple of years when I got this gig. So I knew some of how the sausage was made as far as, you know, gear write-ups and, you know, the outdoor television shows, why they were pushing what gear, you know, stuff that's really not a secret now.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's part that, right? Like you're part playing the game. Like your job is to sell hunting gear. And so that's why you never see like a really negative write-up.
Absolutely.
But you see, so I kind of struggle with that. I'm like, okay, if somebody sends something to me and it's a piece of shit, but I can't say that, how do I differentiate that from something that I really like?
Yeah.
And so I don't know how other people do this, but I kind of adopted this style where if it was something that I didn't really like or I didn't get my hands on, I would just write, this is what this thing is.
Yes.
This is what it's supposed to do, and kind of parrot that marketing speak, but nothing personal in there. You know, like I took this out and I loved it. And then if there was something I used that I was like, man, this is quality product, like this is going to benefit people, then I would try to put some kind of personal, you know, anecdotal spin on it to just give it a little bit, just to like kind of diverge it from the stuff that I didn't like or I didn't get to try. And you just kind of, it's like a sort of a survival method. And it, you know how this is, like the pressure to throw your name behind it, you know, then my name didn't mean anything, but it was tied to Bowhunter, which meant something. So, you know, to throw some weight behind anything, there's constant pressure to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, you see this when you start a podcast and you've got 8 listeners, there are companies out there that are like, hey, we'll send you some free stuff if you, you know, talk about it, or can we get our VP of marketing on? And you're like, it's never ending.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. I know since the birth of the outdoor podcast and, you know, the YouTube, there's been a lot more honest, I feel honest opinions about products compared to in the print world for all those years where I would read an article about a product, or like Inside Archery is a perfect example when they write their reviews or they compare. There's never a single negative comment, whether that bow has more or less hand shock than others, whether the, you know, anything like that, where there's nothing negative about any product. Do you think that hurts the user when they consume that content, the end user of that content?
I don't know. I mean, I think we're pretty well aware of what's going on there.
Yeah.
I think it sort of does hurt us as a whole, like as an industry as a whole, when people are very skeptical. Is it, you know, it's the same thing, like today nobody believes anything on the news because we all know what it's just a propaganda machine on both sides. Like, it's very hard to trust most of those sources now. So we just accept them for what they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, the opportunity for podcasters and YouTubers and people who weren't necessarily saddled to these advertising contracts, I think that's a great thing. I also know that there's the same game is played there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's like you got to filter through this stuff. And, you know, for a while in the print world, you had an opportunity to say no to some of this stuff. Like you had an opportunity to be like, you know, listen, this thing, it broke down right away on me. I can't write about this.
Yeah.
But the change came through quick. And yeah. the change really took hold when the housing market crashed and, you know, the economy took a dump. And, you know, then you had everybody fighting for a smaller piece of the pie. And I mean, every person who had a hunting show, every person who was writing for a magazine, you know, it was a rough time. And so you saw a real transition there to this kind of like sellout coverage or this, you know, like whorish writing where you're like, we and this is a symptom today, man. Like people bitch about like social media influencers. I'm like, the stage for this was set years and years ago. And what happened was, you know, the market crashes. Everybody's like, okay, well, we gotta find a way to get some money out of these people. So you give more of your integrity away, which is what the advertisers want, these manufacturers. Well, when the economy comes back and things are humming along pretty good, you've already set the precedent that that's base level what you'll do.
Yeah.
And so they know that, and there's this constant kind of leveraging of that. And so this is something I've been talking about a little bit more because people don't really seem to understand this. Like they want to go after somebody like Cameron Haynes, who's the face, right? Like he's the guy who's, you know, shooting the Hoyts and doing whatever, and he's the lightning rod, but you don't know what the deliverables are in his contract. And I guarantee you what they were 10 years ago versus now, they're asking 50 times as much from him.
Yeah.
And that there's like a safe zone for manufacturers and marketing companies in between there where they get to demand this stuff or they'll go find somebody else to do it because somebody will do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're Cameron Haynes or whoever, you know, Lee and Tiffany, then you kind of take the brunt of it. And I'm not saying like there isn't some culpability there, but this is a muddy thing.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's been going on a lot longer than a lot of people really think. Everybody thinks, oh, this is like a new YouTube hunter or social media hunter is like the negative thing. I'm like, man, if you're out there and you're like, that guy's a social media hunter, what that guy is, or, you know, like the new version of a TV hunter.
Yeah.
And the new version of a magazine hunter. Like,
yeah.
We've had this shit ever since like hunting had an audience where people would purchase something. For it, this stuff's been happening.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about all the products, you know, and you can even relate it to what you see today. The ATA show just got over, you know, next week I'm going to be bringing somebody on to talk about the hits and misses of the ATA show. And then, you know, it's that season right now. Everybody starts talking about gear because it's ATA, it's SHOT. It's a lot of review content coming out. What did you see? Did you notice any trends? And maybe you can give a specific category, whether that's camo or bows or boots or anything like that, where, man, people just, they missed the mark, or they hit home runs, or, you know, I'll just kind of let you take it in any direction.
I think, you know, this is probably partially a reflection of where I'm at in life.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things I see that I find really interesting is we are in a kind of a space right now where there's a good audience for high-end quality stuff.
Yeah.
And so there's always been, you know, different levels, right? Like, I mean, you could have gone out, you know, 15 years ago, you could have paid $1,000 for a brand new bow or 400. Like, we've always had this, but you're seeing people or manufacturers kind of really recognize that there's like a hardcore segment. And this is primarily bow hunters that you see them targeting.
Yeah.
But there are people out there now who won't scoff at spending $50 or $100 for a really quality broadhead, tight tolerances, you know, good materials. And you're seeing a lot of companies, you know, you've got the Sitkas and the First Lights of the world chasing the real valuable, you know, a little bit more wealthy customer, I guess, or at least somebody who's willing to spend some money on it. And that trickles down and you're seeing that market be addressed really well. And I kind of like that because we've really created this kind of movement of hardcore people who just live for this and want to have the best experience possible.
Yeah.
But, and I think what's good about that is, you know, like having that option's awesome, right? Like if you've got the money and you want to go buy whatever, I think that's cool, but it feels like it sort of lifts the whole thing up. Yeah. And so, yeah, you can still go buy a $40 trail camera and it's going to last you a month and die or whatever. But you have so many nice, like, mid-level and upper range options now where if you want a quality experience in the outdoors, you can buy, you can do the old buy once, cry once type of thing and kind of address like the things that are really important to you, whether that's clothing or it's like a nice bow or you're an arrow broadhead junkie or whatever. I love that we've got a lot of good options out there now.
Yeah. And, are you a believer that price reflects quality then?
Generally.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so let's take like Yeti coolers for an example, right?
Yeah.
Yeti, I think Yeti stuff's awesome. It's freaking expensive. You know, like the Ramblers and Tumblers and stuff are they're not bad, but a cooler is, you know, that's like a commitment for a lot of people, but man, it's badass stuff. And so people say, well, yeah, you're buying the name. And I'm like, yeah, they did a really good job of branding this company. Like they did unbelievable, but there's still a really quality product behind it. And you see some other companies really try that. And it seems like if the product isn't really up to the price and the branding, it'll eventually sort of level off.
Yeah.
You know, cause we got information everywhere.
Yeah. Let me ask you something a little bit. You mentioned Yeti, and I think this is a perfect example of marketing. And I don't know why I am the opposite of what this is. So when I look at a marketing package from First Light or Sitka or Yeti, I see this. It's like really well put together marketing. And I see why those brands are so popular, right? They've created this, hey man, you should join our club type mentality, right? This marketing, and it's worked. But for me, I look at it and I'm turned off by it. And I've never been able to wrap my head around my own thoughts of why that is. But when I see that, I see like elitism, and I see just like the cool kids club, and I've never been into that type of, you know, clickiness, so I get turned off on that. I mean, have you seen that with other products or that kind of marketing backfire in the past?
And I mean, you know, you're 100% on that. I mean, there is that component of this stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a contrarian, man. I don't give a shit about like what it looks like.
Yeah.
I want performance, right?
Yep.
That's in my life in a million different ways. Like I'm obsessed with bird dogs and I don't care what they look like. I want to know what's under the hood and I want to know what's in the last six generations of them, you know? And so there is a part of that, but you got to remember, I mean, we do that with everything. Like it's like human nature to want to be a part of the cool club.
Yeah.
And it's just it's so transparent to some of us. Like some people see that and go, I don't know why you would strive to, you know, connect yourself to that, like that identity. But I mean, think about it this way. This is one of the things that always drove me nuts. When I was at Bowhunter, I would set up on average probably like five or six bows a year, you know, from all the top companies, right? And you know, like to me, some years my favorite bow would be a Bowtech, some years it'd be a Matthews, some years it'd be a Prime, and I just kind of realized, I'm like, these are all really good products. Like if you get a flagship bow from one of the top 10 manufacturers out there, it's gonna be a great bow. But then I would see people who are like, the only bow worth shooting is Hoyt. And then you're like, okay, well, like, have you shot the other ones? No, I've always shot Hoyt.
Yeah.
I was like, well, how the hell do you know then?
Yeah.
Like it's so bizarre to me that we do that, but it's like, we, you know, it's the Ford versus Chevy thing. We can't help ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, I like to stay as unbiased as humanly possible, especially with bows, right? So this past year, I shot a lot of bows before I made the decision to shoot a bow tech this year. And I was able to pick what I liked. Do you think there's people out there, and I mean, we both know there are, but maybe talk about the downfalls of picking a product based off of brand loyalty.
Well, because you could get one that you could get a product that's not really that great for you.
Yeah.
I mean, bows are such a good example of this because the category, you know, there, I don't believe there's a firm leader. I think that there was. I think Matthews was for a while, but that was a while ago. And I think now, I mean, it's part, you know, it's part technology, it's part components, it's part build. It's there's like physical engineering aspects of it that just they just exist. But there's also that part that's like, what do you like to shoot? And that experience of, you know, whether you like a hard back wall, you know, a solid back wall, or, you know, deep valley in the draw cycle, or, you know, like, how do you like your grips? Like, I'm really picky about my grips, you know, like, and so I always tell people when they're like, you know, I've always shot a Matthews and like, you know, I don't know about a Bowtech. I'm like, find a good pro shop that has one to your specs. So if you're 2970 or 2860 or whatever, go in there and shoot one. Close your eyes, draw that sucker back, and compare it to some other bows. You'll have one where you're like, this is the one. I mean, that's just how it works. And so it's sort of it's easy to be a fanboy, you know, and just be like, I am only a Bowtech guy, or I'm only a Prime.
Yeah.
But is that the right choice? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of great options out there, and we see the same thing. You know, this is the broadhead category is a weird one, right? Like people get really loyal about broadheads, but you can look at, like, take Rage, for example. Like, I've killed a ton of stuff with Rage, and I think some of their newer heads are freaking sweet. Like, they perform really well, but they've had models come out in years past where I was like, I'm not, this one isn't working for me. And you kind of see it disappear, you know, because I'm not the only one who's looking at it kind of suspect, you know. But if you were like, this is the only broadhead I'm ever going to shoot, like, okay, you don't know. In 2 years, they might put out something that just sucks.
Yeah.
Like, they just might, you know, and every broadhead company is like this. Every arrow company is like this. And so I think it's really good to keep an open mind on this stuff.
Yeah. So let's take everything that you do out of this next question, right? You're currently a content provider. You got an agreement with Meat Eater. You've have your past experience as a writer, all that. Let's take all this out of the equation. How do you go about picking your equipment? And you can be as wide open on this as you want, or even as specific as you want. Anything from boots and bows to backpacks and camo or anything like that. So how does Tony Peterson pick the equipment that he takes out into the field with him?
Through a lot of trial and error, man. Like, I'm real picky. You know, there's some stuff you're obligated to wear when you do what I do.
Yep.
Or, you know, you're obligated to shoot or whatever. But, you know, there's things like, sights, bow sights, for example. I suffered through buck fever so bad for so long that when I settled on a movable single pin sight and really devoted some time to that, it's one of those things where I just go, this is the thing that works for me.
Yeah.
So now I just got to find something that I like that has the right kind of dial. It has the right size of pins, the brightness that, you know, like, so there, you know, the category's nailed down for me a little bit, or narrowed down, I should say, but I just know this is the style that works for me. And with bows, you know, over the years, I'm just like, okay, I don't care about speed. I think that phase we went through when PSE released their X-Force back in 08 or 07 or whenever it was, and you know, we all jumped on the bandwagon of, oh, we're gonna get to 350, 370, whatever. Like, now I'm like, I don't care about that at all. I want a bow that's really like got a really nice draw cycle and something that just settles in dead in hand, you know, because I'm like you, I'm primarily a whitetail hunter. Like, I'm shooting critters 20 yards away. Like, I don't need, you know, a flat trajectory out to 100 yards. Like, that's not, It's not a priority for me.
Yeah.
And so I choose around my style of hunting. You know, like I know I'm going to hunt a lot of all day hunts throughout the entire season. So I'll choose clothing based around, you know, the weight to warmth factor. How much can I carry in my elk backpack? Cause that's what I use. Like what's going to make it so I have everything I need for all these scenarios, but doesn't take up much space, keeps me warm, keeps me cool, whatever. And so it's really kind of a trial and error stuff. And I go through things every year where I'm like, man, I really like that, or I really didn't. And I'll cull it out, or I'll add something different. And, you know, some stuff, like I'll release, for example, I've been shooting the same hot shot release for like 8 years. It is like barely held together, but it works for me so well. And it's stretched and fit into this way that when I shoot, it's like so comfortable.
Yeah.
And so some of that stuff, you kind of end up and like, believe me, I'm fortunate, man. I've got to file through a lot of stuff, but when you do that, you hit on something that works for you. You just keep it. And I think the hardest part for a lot of people is, yeah, they're going out and buying this stuff, so they're not going to try 8 releases. But, you know, if you go to the range and your buddies are there, they're probably shooting something different.
Yeah.
You know, like if you can get away with it, try some of this stuff out any way you can. And, you know, like the other thing I would say on that, you know, like with like broadheads, for example, you can find opinions on broadheads everywhere. Like find somebody who you trust who's tried a lot of them, or who, you know, maybe has gone through a certain category of them and has really settled on them, and, you know, has hunted elk with them and hunted moose with them, and find a trusted source on that stuff and see, you know, like maybe that'll help you guide your decision.
Yeah. I'm the guy who, if it works for me, I keep it and I keep using it and I keep using it. And I don't really tinker that much. Except maybe with bows, right? When I find my arrow broadhead setup that I like, I keep it. When I find my sight that I like, I keep it. When I find the rest that I like, I keep it. And then it takes something really convincing or a really good recommendation for me to give another product a try. Where do you lie in that? Are you the guy who says, you know, it's working for me, I'm going to keep it, or are you a tinkerer?
I spent years having to be a tinkerer. You know, like I spent a decade having to just change stuff up. And I mean, I had years where I would shoot, you know, 5 or 6, 7 big game animals with 4, 5, 6 different bows. And so I was always, and because I'm switching bows, you know, there's a different rest on this one and there's a different sight on this one. Different peep sites. I mean, so I went through a lot of that, and I'm kind of with this new gig with Meat Eater. I'm kind of like, it's like a guilty pleasure thing for me to be able to find something and stick with it for a while.
Yeah.
Cause I don't have that pressure to constantly switch and try stuff out. And so I kind of naturally do that. So I'm like, I'm not where I used to be, but I still mess around with stuff. And it's because, you know, like things change, man. You know, you might be the guy who goes out mule deer hunts, you know, once a year for 10 days. And so you're setting your bow up to be a whitetail shooter, but also, you know, good enough for a mule deer hunt. So you might have like a 7-pin sight or something. And you might hit a point in your life where you're like, I'm just kind of over the mule deer thing. It's too hard to get a tag or whatever. And if you're sitting in the tree stand all year long with, you know, maybe lighter weight arrows because you want a flatter trajectory and you got a 7-pin sight on there, like it might not be the best thing for you now, you know, like you might have a better chance of making really good shots and, you know, with and having better results from those shots if you bump up your arrow weight a little bit and you declutter your sight window. And so you always kind of got to be aware of that. And same thing, you know, your eyesight might be going bad, or the thing that, you know, that I talked about earlier with the single pin sight that I've talked about so much, this buck fever thing. It's kind of like I talk a lot about quitting drinking, partially because people reach out to me all the time. Like, it's crazy how many people are like, so why did you quit? Like, I'm thinking about quitting, or I think I need to quit. And it's like consistent. The same thing happens with buck fever. When you're in my position, you're like, yeah, I used to get buck fever so bad I would miss deer all the time. And it ruined me for years. people like they approach you kind of like the alcoholism thing, and they're like, you know, I kind of think I might have something similar to what you have. Like, and, you know, it's crazy. But so a part of it is just being like brutally honest with yourself. Like, are you happy with your performance?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's the same thing with like when you train bird dogs, right? Like everybody has the best dog in the world. And then you wrap up a season, and if you're really honest about it, like I'm super excited that pheasant season just ended because I'm looking at this little puppy I'm running, and I go, man, we got a lot of stuff to work on, and I can't wait for it.
Yeah.
Because I know, you know, like you see it laid bare when you're out there. Like, how's your recall? How's your steadiness? You know, all that stuff. The same thing happened at the end of the bow season. You go, okay, did you miss any deer? Did you hit him in the shoulder, in the guts? Did you fall apart? How did it go? And if you see some kind of trend there that you're not happy with, there might be a gear change you can make that'll help you with that.
Yeah. So I often thought of this. So I changed, it was like 13 years. I've used the same, not the exact same rest, but I've always used a ripcord drop away rest. Okay. I've been using it for a very long time, 13, 14 years. I don't think a cable drop away rest, and I loved it. I loved it. You know, I beat the shit out of it. And then this year I got my new Bowtech, and I said, man, I had a buddy talk to me about limb driven, and he talked to me about vapor trail, and he goes into all the detail and talked to why he used it. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to give it a try. So I'm stepping away from something that I've been using and I've highly recommended for a handful of years. So I stepped away from it, and my accuracy, I feel, went up. Whether maybe it's because of the product itself, or maybe because I was trying a little bit harder because I was excited, you know, like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Where it's not the actual product that is making the difference, but it's my attentiveness to my setup that's probably more detailed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I do think that, you know, Vapor Trail makes great products. Ripcord does too.
Yeah.
And I should know this, but I don't. I have heard people explain why a limb driven rest is a better choice than a cable.
Yeah.
And I don't really, you know, it must just be a fraction of a second difference in, you know, how it's guiding that arrow or something. But there is a reason we have both of those options. And there is a reason why you see some of the people who really know their shit, they're shooting limb driven rests.
Right. And I think I could be 100% wrong here, but this is me going off of what I think somebody else told me. And the limb doesn't bounce back when it goes, right? So, you know how on cables, you've seen the slow motion of the cables vibrating and going like spaghetti noodles all over the place. I think that's part of the main reason that the cable, when you're, you know, a cable driven drop away, there could be a tendency for it to bottom out and back up and just bounce around because of the cables moving. But on a limb, it just wham, and then it stays down. You know what I mean? There's no bouncing around to it. So anyway, my accuracy, I feel, went up. I became more confident in shooting. I liked shooting more, so I shot more, thus, you know, reinforcing positive behavior. And I don't know, I felt comfortable at longer distances and all this stuff. And to the point now where I'm just like, man, I think I'm going to stick with the limb-driven rest.
Mm-hmm. You know, the only thing I didn't like about using limb-driven rest was when I would go spot and stalk and just having a longer cord there that can get caught on
more stuff. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. But otherwise, no, I mean, I think it's a good choice, but that's a good move to make. You know, I mean, if you're shooting better because of it, or, you know, for whatever reason, when you put it on there, I mean, that's a win, man.
Yeah. So how do I ask this next question? Is gear selection less, in your opinion, is gear selection less specs and functionality of the gear and more mental, and on how that all works? Because you know, with us being impressionable to marketing and influence of, you know, a friend or a colleague or something like that, compared to what the product actually does when we use it. I don't know what I'm asking actually here, but do you understand what I'm asking?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So what I'm trying to get at is, does, like, there's all these products out there. You mentioned it earlier about the Bose, how Bose are so similar, right? There's not one that really stands up, and gear, you know, rests and arrows and broadheads, you know, in every little category, there's not one that really stands up above another, whether it's through functionality or design or engineering or innovation or whatever. There is the cream of the crop, and then there's maybe middle, and then there's lower, but for the most part, they all function at the same level. How much of our decision is based off of, I don't know whether it's, man, I'm having a brain fart here. I'm trying to say, are there products that stand out so much that they're actually different than others and they perform so much better than others? Or are we to believe, should we just think that, hey man, a lot of these products do the same thing?
I think there, yes. So there's something to be considered with this stuff. When you take these categories, I think the problem that we have a lot of times, so you can say, and I say this, like, okay, the top 10 bow companies, they're churning out really good offerings, right? The top 5 broadhead companies, same deal, rest sites, whatever. But there are little things, right? And I think what we miss a lot of times is so much of this stuff looks the same.
Yeah.
So you can't know until you use it, right? Like, let's use broadheads for an example.
Yeah.
Take like a NAP Spitfire that opens up like a jackknife, kind of.
Yep.
You know, a Rage will open up like the blade slide down. So if you're talking like mechanical broadheads, I look at this and I go, why? It doesn't make sense to me to shoot one that opens up like a jackknife when I can shoot one that doesn't. You know what I mean? And yeah. So I look at this stuff and I go, okay, in my head, that makes sense. How does this perform in the field? And so, you know, I go out and I'll hunt with that different kind of stuff, and it'll lead me to places where I go, I am not happy with that. Or, you know, like if you take bows, for example, you can look at them and go, all right, you know, Bowtech makes badass bows. Hoyt does, Matthews does, Prime does, right on down the line. But I've set up tons of bows and shot them through a Hooter shooter, a Spot Hog Hooter shooter machine. And I can tell you, at least from my experience, which is take it or leave it, whatever, there, I don't know if you can find a more accurate bow than a Prime. And I you can get really, really close with these other bows, but there's like something to be said about that. And then so you start digging in and go, okay, well, this is a bow company that was built by engineers who love to bow hunt. Like, there's something to that. Mm-hmm. Now, you might go, that's top priority for me, but I don't like the draw cycle. I'd rather go with this or that, or I don't like the grip. So there's like all these little intricacies to it. And so we know that we don't have the option to test this stuff out. We don't know who to believe. So we default to that kind of stuff where we kind of make those decisions based on emotional or, you know, based on whatever, like this worked in the past or this, my buddy uses this. But there's a lot going on in this stuff. And I think my dream, like, to kind of circle back around what we talked about before, is just to be able to be more honest about this and not go like, okay, well, you know, you're a Prime fanboy or you're a Bowtech fanboy or something, but just to like be like honest and have people out there who are talking about this going, yeah, man, I've used all these and this is what I like and this is what works for me because of this reason or that reason. And I'll give you an example. So I wrote a piece for Meat Eater a while ago about single bevel and double bevel broadheads that are making a big comeback, you know. And the idea is a single bevel broadhead cores its way through an animal and causes all this extra damage. But because of that, like, physics say, okay, it's probably not going to penetrate as far. So the big debate is a double bevel is probably going to give you a better chance of having two holes. A single bevel is going to give you the chance to have a bigger wound channel and more damage, but maybe not penetrate as far. And I reached out to a bunch of different people and talked to them, and the opinions on that shit are wild.
Yeah.
And then I emailed Bill, or I interviewed Bill from Iron Will Broadheads, who actually makes these things and tests them in ballistic gel and other stuff. And he's like, this is exactly how it goes. Like, you're going to get more penetration from the double bevel, but you know, you're going to have a little bit smaller wound channel, a little bit less damage, or you're going to shoot the single bevel and it's going to perform great for you, and it's going to twist in through and it's going to get this. And I was like, man, like, that guy, you know, he's selling both. He doesn't have a vested interest in one category being awesome and one not. And he's just like, here's all the testing. I'm an engineer. Here's what it shows us. But we kind of go to, like, I don't know, like the hunting public guys or somebody. And we're like, okay, these guys know their shit and they shoot deer with this. And like, that's the source. But I'm like, man, we could probably do really well if we had better sources for some of this information.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel you.
I have no idea if I answered anything you were trying to get
to there. No, it's that, you know, in the movie, what's that movie where Will Ferrell stands up and gives this crazy answer in a debate? Then he's just like, hey, what happened? Yeah, old school. What happened? I blacked out. So that could have been the last 10 minutes of this podcast. So the last thing I want to talk about here is Made in America. I don't make my decisions really based. I'll tell you this. I want to buy American made products, but I don't always do. How big of an impact does being made in America have in the hunting industry per se? I mean, is it obviously, as Americans, it's nice. It would be great if all of our products were made in America, but at the same time, we know they're not. When it comes to purchasing decisions, is being made in America a big deal to you, or what have you found throughout the years?
I'm like you, man. I love the idea. I kind of have peeked behind the curtain. So I know a guy in the industry who was, for a while, he was trying to develop a website where he would direct people to Made in America hunting products.
Yeah.
And I talked to him about it, and he said, the problem is there aren't any.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was being a little facetious, but the reality was he was starting to find that the companies that even advertised that, you'd see it was assembled in America.
Exactly.
Or, you know, it was some kind of weasel word thing. And I'm not saying there aren't American-made products. There absolutely are. I think, you know, this is like a parallel to this would be, okay, it would be awesome if the hunting industry, which is kind of red-blooded Americans, you know, like, it would be awesome if our stuff was produced here more, for sure. But the bigger issue would be like, yeah, it would be awesome if we had a way better manufacturing base for everything here instead of relying on China and some of those Asian countries. Like, it's the same thing with social media. It's like, oh, you could kill social media and save hunting. I'm like, no, we should probably kill social media and save ourselves as a society, you know? And so, yeah, I would freaking love it if we had a bigger manufacturing movement here in the U.S. and brought some jobs to some places, and we could buy some hunting gear and some other stuff that was like, you knew, like, it was made here, but man, it's a tough deal. And our reliance on China on that is a bad deal, I think.
Yeah, I feel you. I always like to support them, especially on this hunting gear podcast, and let everybody know that, hey, this is an American made product. But at the same time, it's just like, I don't know. I want to buy American, but I guess I don't always do it. I don't know why that is. Maybe I need to take a deep dive within myself.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of, I think it would be a full-time job to try to do that.
Yeah.
Like, you think about all the random stuff you buy, it would be, and maybe this is a cop-out, I don't know. Yeah. But I do the same thing. Like, when I write up stuff, I'm like, I always want to highlight that that's a Made in America thing. But, you know, like, you, there's probably, I don't know if you could put together a bow with all the accessories and then outfit yourself in clothing and boots and, you know, optics and whatever else. Like, I don't know if you could start from zero and make yourself a bow hunter through purchasing stuff and do it all American made. It'd be kind of an interesting experiment, actually.
Heck yeah. Maybe I'll take a look into that. See if I could.
I'd be curious because, you know, maybe you can. My gut tells me it'd be pretty difficult, but I bet it's not impossible.
Yeah. And I bet that the price would be crazy if you added it all up compared to not made in America products.
Yeah, but you would have to qualify that with quality, right?
Exactly.
Like, I mean, you could outfit yourself as a bow hunter with, you know, Chinese made products for pennies on the dollar compared to this experiment, but you'd have shitty stuff. Like,
yeah.
I mean, or I would say that you would have a lot of stuff that would not be that great a quality. And so I don't know. You'd have to, there'd have to be some kind of leveling agent in there to take that into account, I think.
Yeah, that's the truth, man. Well, I think this is a good place to call her quits, Tony. This is just a quick BS session here today. Really appreciate your time. As far as gear's concerned, anything else we need to let the people know before we call her quits today?
You know, I would say the one thing that I would stress with hunting gear is, I don't know how to say this without getting into trouble. There's certain things I really value.
Yes.
So one of those things is not being cold or not being uncomfortable. So I think there's certain things you can buy that will make you a more successful hunter.
Yes.
I really do. Like, I think good clothing is important.
Yeah.
I think good boots are really important. I think, you know, a broadhead that's not going to fall apart when it hits a rib, real important. Yeah. You know, and I think quality arrows that are you know, spine and weight matched, and they're built to tight tolerances. Like, I think that stuff matters. And so I always tell people, like, yeah, it sucks, you know, spending up for some of this stuff, but there are categories in the hunting industry that I don't even hardly ever buy anymore because I don't feel like they make a difference in my hunt. Like,
yeah,
this is probably going to get me in trouble. Like, I don't know the last time I used, like, a bottle of Dopey.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Part of it's my style, right? I like to set up where deer walk and I try to shoot them. But some of these things, like a bottle of scent eliminating spray, I don't remember the last time I bought one of those. Like,
same.
I have some things that I think about it, like, growing up, like, I used to, like, rely on that stuff, or that used to be a real, you know, like, that
major,
that was
going
to be in my backpack. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, whether it helped me kill anything or not. And I think you could tell by now, I'm not really relying on that stuff a whole lot because I don't feel like it's tipping the odds in my favor at all. So, but I do think being comfortable gets me to sit out there longer. That's important. Yeah. I do think shooting a bow that I really, really like and is it works with me. I know I shoot it more. I shoot it better. And all of that feeds into making better shots in the field. So there are things, like, I think you can buy. And, you know, like, if you're sitting there and you're going, I don't want to spend thousands of dollars on hunting gear, right? Look at where you can cut some of that stuff out and, you know, take some of that money that you might spend on a product you probably don't really need and put it towards something that is actually going to enhance your experience.
Like a tag, another tag or something. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like the right kind of ground blind if you're taking kids out, you know? I mean, like, I put on a lot of miles every year scouting and pheasant hunting and deer hunting, and just generally I can wear out a pair of boots pretty fast. And so having the right footwear, if you're, you know, like, and if you're in the right space where you do walk a lot and you're covering a lot of ground, something like that, I would rather have really good boots and, you know, eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches all week on my hunt than have okay boots. And you know what I mean? Like, it's sort of a matter of just prioritizing.
Yeah, that's a fact. That's a fact. Well, Mr. Peterson, I really appreciate your time today. Thank you very much for hopping on. And I don't know, good luck with your bird dog.
Awesome. Thanks, buddy.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network. And this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.